welcome to Expounded Universe, Season 6, Episode 10, Dollar Dollar Bills. The book, Planet of Twilight by Barbara Hambly. The year, 1997. With your hosts, Jeff and John. Let's go!
Welcome to Expounded Universe. I'm Jeff, your host, joined as always by John, your host.
Yay, I'm a host.
He's a host, I'm a host, everyone's a host.
Good.
How you doing?
I'm good. I'm very good.
I've got lots of baby stuff in the brain. Don't look at me too closely, huh?
Don't look at me. I'm a baby monster.
I've seen so many episodes of Sesame Street. All my jokes are from there now.
I got to tell you, these new episodes of Sesame Street, garbage.
I know, I'm not a fan. I'm doing what I can with bad material, but their new format's like vignette-driven, where I know they've always done like little bits here and there, but now it's the same bits with interstitials that are kind of repetitive. They always cut to Murray, and Murray's like, all right, coming up next is like Abby's flying fairy school, but first, let's learn about the letter F.
Yeah, that's the problem I have with it right now, is it's so structured of just like, okay, we're going to do some Sesame Street stuff to start with, but then it is just the same, like, little cartoons and vignettes over and over again.
Yeah, they have three or four little shows that they show. Abby's Flying Fairy School is pretty much a universal constant, and for a long time so was Elmo's World, but now it's become Elmo the Musical.
Yeah.
And then the one in the middle is either Bert and Ernie's Great Adventures, which is awful.
Yeah.
Or the even worse Super Grover 2.0.
Great.
So, I mean, I know this. And there are so many questions I have about modern Sesame Street. Like, why does Murray never interact with any other members of the Sesame Street cast except for the sheep? Like, there's never an episode where he shows up and talks to Grover or something.
I think he doesn't know how to get to Sesame
Street.
Yeah,
he's just wandering New York, a lost soul.
Yeah, he's been banished.
Yeah, him and Ovahita have been kicked from the Garden of Sesame.
They are the Adam and Eve of Sesame Street.
Just wandering the land of the non-devout.
Yeah, they're in Nod right now.
Yeah, it's not great for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all Ovahita's fault because she spoke Spanish in God's garden.
whereas English is God's language.
God's language, yeah. I've gone to enough American church. I know this.
Yeah, I mean, if you eat of the apple of the tree of knowledge, you learn Spanish. Everyone knows this.
Yep, that's the first thing you learn.
You're like, oh, wait a minute, I'm naked. Also, Spanish.
Categorical text suggests that the apple of Eden might have actually been an avocado or a jicama.
Ah, yes.
So,
and there was some tamarind sprinkled on there.
I also want to know if there are actual puppets of the characters from Flying Fairy School, Blog and Gonagon.
I hope so.
They're built in puppets. I mean, they're CG characters, but they're built to be like puppet style, like in terms of where like they bend and move.
Yeah.
So I'm like, did they build them as actual puppets for a stage show at some point or something?
I hope so.
Me too. I really hope so. I hope so much.
Hey, did you know that we read two chapters of this book?
I forgot it all. I want to talk about Sesame Street. Nice segue, but I resist it.
How about no, buddy?
I think that the book I read might have been an illusion. I will roll to disbelief.
Man, we are on the penultimate episode of this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we've got four chapters left. These are the first two of the last four, and chapter 19 starts with Leia and Calista just talking to each
other. They're still just shooting that breeze.
God damn it.
So they're still hanging out in what would admittedly be a pretty cool location for like a photo shoot or something. The inside of a big geode.
Yeah. I mean, at least they're like, oh, we're hanging out with the speakers?
Yeah, they're hanging out with the old timers or the speakers of the Theron speakers.
Yeah. And they're in a big crystal, but when last we left, Leia was having a nightmare about like the evil Palpatine Leia and the shitty slave Leia.
Yeah, which was like, a pretty cool nightmare, but then she was like, no, I choose my own path. Yeah.
But now she's talking to Calista probably about that, and Calista's like, hey, you need to, you know, finally accept that fucking Vader's your father, and she's like, fuck you.
I mean, Calista's literally the perfect person for her to be talking to in this situation, because Calista speaks entirely in purple-ass metaphor. So when Leia comes out of a dream, like, I have many, many stupid dream thoughts. She's like, oh, that's wonderful.
Oh, that's exactly my shit.
That's my specific type of jam.
Oh, yeah. Before you're on my bullshit now.
Before you go any further, I'll need to know your four different astrological signs.
I'm going to do the deep reading. Tell me, what time of day were you born?
Who's got a deck of standard Sabbath cards?
So, Leia is resistant to the idea of being like, oh, yeah, I need to take Vader and believe that's my father. Because she's super attached to Bail Organa because he was a good person, and she doesn't want to think of Vader as her dad because Vader was a huge asshole.
And this whole thing where, like, she has to absorb that legacy, I find it a little distasteful. I'm like, he didn't raise her. He spent most of his life as a political opponent of hers.
Yeah.
On several occasions, he tried to kill things she enjoyed.
Yeah, and succeeded.
I'm going to go with the person who took care of you growing up as your dad.
Well, yeah. But she's like, you don't need to go, oh, yeah, that's my dad and I love him. But to accept, like, that was your biological father and you have, you know, some of him in you.
I guess. But even he didn't have all that much of him in him. He was more robot than man, twisted and evil. Or whatever the line was.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's... So anyway, they're like, yeah, you have to learn to become the daughter of Vader, but you don't have to be, like, the daughter of Vader about it.
No, I mean, Callista's basically just saying, like, you need to accept it so that you can get past your shit, because otherwise, you're just going to have that nagging, oh, am I going to turn out like Vader in the back of your mind?
Yeah, she's going to keep having the dreams, and she's going to raise her kids all weird because she'll do everything in her power to not acknowledge the whole Vader connection. And given that these books really lean into the whole bloodlines aspect of Jedi culture.
Yeah.
Where anyone who ever has sex with a Jedi immediately has three Jedi kids, and they start a new legacy of Jedi kids.
Yep.
So, yeah, she does kind of need to acknowledge the legacy, I guess.
Well, mostly it's, hey, you're so worried about, like, freaking out and becoming evil, but you need to chill, because you're not Vader, you're also not Bail Organa, you're you.
Yeah.
No, just fucking hang out.
It's not the worst advice, it's just kind of colored with the prose of Callista, because she has to be like, though now I touch not the Force, though I reach for it and feel it, I feel it not. Not even in this new body, as I once felt it in the old. Like, all right, I got it. And then they have a fun lightsaber fight for practice with each other.
Yeah. So she's like, all right, let's fucking have at. And it turns out that Callista's way better at teaching ladies than Luke.
I mean, part of it's because Callista didn't always used to be this tall. That Cray Mingla, the person whose body that her ghost is inhabiting at the moment, is almost as tall as Luke himself is. And so, but she learned lightsaber fighting as, like, a Leia-sized person.
Yeah.
So she understands Leia's, like, reach and all that and can teach based on that knowledge.
Yeah.
She also has a sun-colored lightsaber, if you were curious about what that's about.
Yeah, she's got that yellow lightsaber.
Got that yellow one that's, like, the default for when you haven't picked a side yet.
Yeah.
That's
for the consulars, okay?
I am kind of happy to see a strictly non-Jedi character get to carry around and wield a lightsaber without a bunch of falderall about it.
Yeah.
Because she has no Force access whatsoever.
Yeah. In this one, it's less... like, oh, I'm using the Force to not cut my own arm off,
mm-hmm.
and more just, look, I've practiced with a lightsaber so much that it's just muscle memory. I know how to use this.
Yeah, so the two of them have a fight, and we also get an interesting new realization, that one that I had not yet heard in the book, that the speakers go out in the desert and receive, like, straight-up discussions from the Crystal Rocks. Like, we've had, like, little rumors given to us by the settlers, who are like, yeah, they think they can talk to rocks or some shit, whatever.
Well, yeah, the book says that they think they are talking to, like, their ancestors or whatever,
mm-hmm.
But it's just because the Force Rocks pull that image out of their head and go, hey, it's me, your Uncle Barry!
They're really holding the Force Rock thing reveal, or I'm sorry, Barbara is really holding that Force Rock reveal, because we're down to the wire at this point. It's about time to tell us the Force Rocks are alive, because we figured it out a long time ago.
I mean... spoiler, I guess, it doesn't happen in these two chapters.
No.
So we've got two chapters after this for a lot of wrap-up.
Yeah. So anyway, one of the speakers, a woman by the name of Bay.
Yeah.
I want to say.
Yeah, B-E with an accent over E.
Yeah, so Bay. So Queen Bay comes back.
And is like, what up?
Hey, there's huge force storms outside.
Also, fucking the newcomers are they're moving on installations. And
yeah, they're trying to take over. They're trying to take over the gun platforms.
Yeah. And that's why they're like, ooh, you get cool visions. You knew shit was happening, even though you've just been sitting up in a fucking crystal all day.
Yeah, and she'd be like, yes, my grandmother came and told me in a crystal vision.
Hey.
It was like a Fleetwood Mac song. It was great. She was all flouncy and drowsy and flipping around with veils and shit.
It was wonderful.
So good. So many crystals.
There was an entire marching band.
I spent so much money on homemade dream catchers at the end. So, anyway, we more or less cut from them, but it's pretty much apparent that they're going to go down and interact with some townspeople for some reason at the end of this.
Well, they're going to try and, you know, save the gun emplacements. That's what they're leaving with.
Yeah, because they know the rules of the gun emplacements, that the gun emplacements are important to keep the Death Seed from getting off planet.
Yeah.
So they're going to go try and help that. And then I guess we cut to
C-3PO and R2-D2 on Psi-Block 12.
Oh, yeah, the plague planet.
Yeah, they are still trying to get a message out where 3PO is just cycling between basic and one of 6 million languages.
Yeah, that's still a weird choice, but what are you going to do?
Yeah, and I like that one of the ones he's like, oh, well, it's hard to do an exact translation of this.
They don't have a lot of tech. It was Yeb, and they don't have a lot of technical words. So
it's just like a corporation needs help that is not a threat to your corporation or any other corporation and will not be in the future, but they desire assistance.
It was pretty well written, yeah. And also spelled out for us in that language, too. So that was kind of fun to read. Bunch of apostrophes and repeated words. But yeah, basically he's beaming out this translation and amusing himself by thinking about how complicated it is to send, like, please send help, this planet is infected with plague, in a variety of languages.
Yeah.
He also pauses for a second to think about how easy it is to send the message out in Bith. Because Bith is just numbers. It's just like, hey, 932, 12-7.
Ah.
7. What a cut up.
625. That's so weird. I don't understand how their language is numbers.
I mean, I guess it's just sort of like they're ordering food at each other all the time.
I don't know.
Number 22.
I'll
take 5 number 5s.
It's like the old joke of the guy who's new in prison and here's a guy yell out 47 and everybody laughs.
Mm-hmm.
And there's silence.
I've not heard
this.
You can go ahead.
Yeah, and then someone goes 12. Everybody busts up laughing. And the new guy looks at his cellmate and goes, what's this? Why is everybody laughing? He goes, oh, look, we've all been in prison forever. And at this point, we've already told every joke that we know. So we've just assigned him numbers. So when we say it, we're just saying that joke to each other, but it's a shorthand.
Oh, very good.
And so the new guy kind of nods and goes, yeah, all right, 36. And nobody laughs. And he turns and goes, what's up? And he's like, well, some people know how to tell a joke.
That's a different ending than I was expecting, and I enjoyed it.
Hey, there you
go. Thank you for the fine joke.
You are welcome.
Anyway, I feel like Bith can only express numbers related to the cost of a band and the cost of a ticket off planet. So
obviously.
I mean, that's the thing. We've learned a lot about Bith in our journey.
Oh, yeah. We've got big Bith knowledge right now.
Yeah. Didn't we establish at some point that I think it was the person who trained Anakin was trained by a Bith or something?
I think it was the person who trained Darth Plagueis was a Bith.
That's right. But Darth Plagueis was trained by a Sith Bith.
Yeah, by a Sith Bith.
A Sith Bith with a Sith.
A Sith Bith with.
Yeah. Don't worry, though. It was benign. The Sith of the Sith Bith.
Yeah, the Sith Bith had a lisp.
Yeah. Which made everything completely much more understandable.
Yeah. Obviously.
He wrote the legend of Darth Plagueis the Wise.
It's not a story that the Jedi would tell you, mostly because it's completely incomprehensible. It's just numbers.
Well, anyway, these two have their conversation. We cut to 3PO. 3PO's sending out the message from the plague planet, and he's everything on the planet is turning off. Everything's running out of power. They haven't seen a living person in forever.
And they're both pretty much just like, yeah, we're just gonna shut off here. At some point, we're going to power down. We're on reserve energy right now as it is. And this is going to be our graveyard right here.
Yep, we're just going to die in the room we're in. And 3PO's kind of just, whatever.
No, well, yeah, he's like, normally I say we're doomed because it's an opinion. Mm-hmm. He's like, oh, no, it's fact now.
Yeah, we're definitely doomed. And R2 is kind of like, eh, so what?
We're droids. Who cares? Someone will find us.
But then it turns out that someone indeed does get their message.
They're like, ooh, sweet, a ship.
Yeah, they can barely see a ship landing through the greasy transparent steel that's up in this control tower they're standing in. So they go clattering down the stairs to see who it is.
Yeah, well, they're like, okay, if we get to... Like, if we start leaving for the ship dock now, we'll get there when they arrive, because we don't want to get there late, have them show up, look around at everyone dead, and leave.
Yeah. So they got to rush on ahead, so they abandon their current post and go clattering along to go meet up with this landing ship. They have no idea what it is, because, again, their control tower window completely covered in, like, grease or plague juice or something.
Now, at this point, I was like, oh, it's got to be Han.
Yeah,
we're finally going to have that happen.
Yeah. I thought it was Yarbulk. I thought it was going to be Yarbulk Yem showing up again and to continue more of the stories of Yarbulk Yem.
Nah, man. He dropped him off. And as we know, every time they get dropped off by something, that character's gone.
I mean, we've seen Yarbulk twice.
Yeah, but he wasn't dropped off. He didn't get on a ship with them yet.
No, he just ended up being a secondary captive. But yeah, so maybe if we're lucky, this is Han, Lando, and Chewie, and we can finally have the Han, Lando, Chewie droid reunion we were really hoping for.
Yeah, at least we'll get some characters together. But instead of that, let's introduce more characters here in Chapter 19 of 22.
So it's the Empire. The Empire has, well, sort of. It's an Empire vessel.
Yeah, there's no insignias on it, and they see Empire-style, like, E-suits on the people coming out, but it looks like all of the Empire, like, patches have been ripped off. There's nothing that signifies them as that, but it's all Empire stuff.
And not only that, but the person leading the team that comes out of the ship is a Twi'lek.
Yeah.
Which is like, there's no way that the Empire would hire Twi'leks to do any of their work. Plus, there's some ladies in this crew, and the Empire didn't really mix there.
They're notoriously anti-alien and anti-lady?
Yeah, they only let women do anything in the Empire if they were obscenely high-ranked, specifically. Like, if there was never a point where they were anything short of, like, a moth, or if they were secrets, like Mara Jade.
Yeah, I mean, almost everything was going to be like, oh, if you're a lady, it's either because you're far too talented to be ignored.
Yeah.
Or you're someone's special secret project.
That's the thing. Every single woman in the Empire, in the expanded universe that we ever read, not now. Now there's newer characters that have, you know, you've got Phasma in the that's not really the Empire either. It's the First Order, but still.
Yeah, no, I'm saying in Legends.
Yeah, in Legends, women are always pet projects if they're in the Empire. Every single one of them is Wilhuff Tarkin discovered her on a planet and decided to raise her because she was unusually good at the job.
And Vader found this and made her one of his 27 secret apprentices that he's had.
Yeah, so honestly, Vader's more responsible for bringing women into the Empire than just about anyone else.
Oh, yeah.
Because we know he trained at least two. Because he had Mara Jade, and he also had the Ferrario lady from Crystal Star. Riao. Which, again, the audiobook tells us is Rilao, but no, it isn't.
No, it isn't.
Yeah.
Get out.
So, anyhow, it's Empire people. They capture the droids almost immediately and bring them on board the ship. And they are consistently receiving instructions over the comm system from a tinny, unidentifiable voice because they have a bad comm system and because they want to set up some suspense.
Yeah, they get into the, like, main office room on this ship, and it's so stark and imperial in here, and there's a chair, and it turns around, and it's Admiral Dala.
Admiral Dala has made her appearance in the book.
Great.
At chapter 19 of 22, we introduce the major villain for several other books.
Yeah. Now, if you're like me, I'm sorry, but
yeah, that's
also
rough. I'm glad I'm not.
You've never read any of those books, and we're like, and it turns around, and it's Admiral Dala, and I'm like, okay.
Which they lampshade the severity of it by having 3PO have to be like, oh, Atsu, remind me to update my news reports. I thought Admiral Dala was dead.
Well, yeah, but that's still like, oh my, someone we thought was dead and is very important is here. But if you haven't read those books, you're like, what is this late fucking, like, final hour nonsense that you're putting out here that I do not care about.
Well, we go on at great length to determine that Admiral Dalla having already lost at the Jedi Praxium on Yavin 4. Her big ship, the Nighthammer, is long destroyed. Her association with Admiral Gilad Paleon appears to have come to an end. She's bitter, she's tired, and she's old.
None of that makes any sense to me.
But the one thing that John is not missing out on is the only thing that ever happens when Dala shows up in a book, or Dala, whatever, which is long descriptions about her hair. Her hair is more of a character than she is.
Yeah, they're real big on, like, ooh, she's got that red hair
running down her back like the tail of a comet.
Ooh, it's in a braid. Look at that red hair.
Oh, the red braid of fiery, untamable hair. Braided, so I guess it's tamed, but it can't be tamed.
And we stop there, and the very end is just a little Han and Lando business where they, when last we left them, were getting a hollow fake of Leia,
mm-hmm.
and they have managed to get, like, not a lot, but they've cobbled together a Republic fleet to go try and stop Gatellus.
Yeah, they've got themselves a little fleet to go stop Gatellus with, comprised of a bunch of, like, skip ray blast boats and other various ships that are pulled out of Wikipedia, no doubt, and also a couple of X-Wings and a newcomer to the fighter game, the E-Wing.
Yeah, so they've got, you know, some stuff assembled, but Han's like, we got to get there before the actual fleet gets there if we want to have a chance.
Mm-hmm.
So we gotta jump now. So their whole thing is just, all right, cool, we managed to lie our way into a defense force, but we're going to jump ahead of the defense force to get there early.
Yeah, and they have a discussion about where they're going to go. They try to choose between Paduchus Chorios and Nam Chorios. And Han uses some of his famous non-linear smuggler thinking to determine that it must be Nam Chorios that's the important one.
Well, yeah, because he was like, it can't be a coincidence that Leia goes missing after meeting with someone from Nam Chorios right before all of this goes down.
Yes, yeah. So they're going to go to Nam Chorios, but he knows about the gun emplacements of Nam Chorios and all that. So he's like, okay, here's the plan. We're going to hyperspace into within, like, an inch of the gun emplacements. Like, their plan, they didn't really speak it out loud, but they were like, yeah, we're going to do an insane hyperspace jump that's like, hair trigger, we might mess this up and die.
Yeah. And Lando is all angry because he's like, nah, Nam Chorios is a fucking rock. Why would anyone go there?
Useless rock. And Han's like, I don't know, but it's got to have something to do with something. It's probably got to do with Lorinar Corporation. Whatever. It's definitely where Leia is. We have to go there.
Yeah. And that ends chapter 19. So not much has happened. Like, we finished the chapter with, like, some discussion and a big reveal of Dala, but, like,
man, is that ever some inside baseball, though? If you're not like me and you're like, oh, Dala, okay, I know who that is and what that's all about. It was just like, that's Admiral Dala, who?
Okay, all right. But even the whole thing is just set up for more stuff. It's Leia and Callista talk, but they're on their way to action. C-3PO and R2-D2 sit around and muse about their death, and then find an admiral. And Han and Lando. Lando?
Yeah, it's
Han's Landa.
Han and Lando.
Hone and Londo.
Lando Malari, the ambassador from the great people that had little vampire frock coats and six giant penises.
I'm sorry, what?
I forget the name of the species, but
on
Babylon 5.
Yes, I only remember that because we did a Babylon 5 RPG.
And we made fun of them for being extremely boring as far as aliens are concerned, because they're just fat little dudes with stupid...
little fat vampires.
Little fat vampires with bad haircuts.
Yeah.
And people wrote in to complain that we were too mean to their beloved show, and said
that also they're not boring because they have six dicks.
They have six giant prehensile dicks that fold into their stomachs.
Great.
And I was like, yeah, whip them out then, or leave me alone. I don't want to hear about something that the show added after the show.
Yeah.
I get enough of that at my job.
But yeah, again, both of them are just like, we assembled a thing and we're going to go stop that fleet momentarily. So the whole of chapter 19 is just, oh, just you wait. I'll do something eventually.
It's a prelude. It's chapter 19, a prelude of what's to come, and in my 3-chapter short story about Star Wars.
Ugh.
So, meanwhile,
chapter 20, we get Luke's business. So he's finished up with Legaeus lying on the ground beneath the
That's
electricity
right. The two
blanket.
Of them, the two of them had to spend the night being shocked so that they wouldn't die to
gasp.
Yeah.
I'm shocked.
Yeah, and they couldn't spoil anything for each other, or they'd ruin it and they'd die.
Yeah. So,
have you ever seen The Matrix? No. Oh, shoot, I was really hoping for something to talk about.
Yeah, they are, I guess, all better now.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's daytime.
Yeah. They've been electrified, and now they're in sunlight, so good for them.
Yeah.
But they're going to the gun emplacements as well, because they also need to stop the newcomers from blowing it up, because they also know about the fact that if this works, then Seti Ashgad gets to take shit off planet.
One of my favorite things about all this is that Luke having stolen that Mobcat chariot car is a great
chance. Mobcat Goldthwait?
He stole Bobcat Goldthwait's thunder. And now,
how dare he?
Now Bobcat can't find it and doesn't remember how to do the voice.
That was his thunder.
That was his thunder. The thunder was that weird voice. Can you do that voice, John?
No, it comes from down under.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that you don't. There's one voice you can't, because you really are the man of 100 voices.
The thing is, I can't remember the voice. Like, I'm sure if I sat down and listened to a clip of Bobcat doing it,
oh,
I could get there.
It is really hard to do.
Oh, I know.
It's a lot about pitch modulation.
Because it's, I wish I could fully remember it, because it's very
just do what
vibration
I do.
In the back of the throat while also being high-pitched, and it's very weird.
Just do what I do and remember all of the events of Police Academy 4.
I've never watched a Police Academy movie.
Not even the first one?
None of them.
Oh my goodness, what an interesting hole in your cultural library.
I think I've seen maybe all of 2 minutes of any of them.
Yeah. Well, the first one's all right. After that, they fade rapidly from value. And even the first one's one of those movies where nowadays you have a hard time liking it in any capacity, because it's just white guy expects Breeze is rewarded.
Yeah.
It's such an 80s thing to see as a movie. Like, there's a whole bunch of new police officers, and all of them are having a hard time because they're the misfits. For example, some of them are black. That's how you can tell they're the misfits.
Yeah, and some of them are ladies.
Yeah. And then there's the one white guy that's having a hard time getting in. Oh, there's a couple of them. One of them is a little too weird and Dan Aykroyd-y.
One of them's a little too Dan Aykroyd-y.
He's not Dan Aykroyd. He's just a little too Dan Aykroyd-y.
Yeah, he's
anyway,
Dan Aykroyd-y.
I'm sorry. We're going way too deep into Police Academy.
Welcome to a review of Police Academy, which I've never seen.
And I haven't seen for decades, so I feel like it would be a bad time for us to conduct a review of it. Let's start with the story of Commandant Lasard. I'm sorry, as you were.
So Luke is on his way to the gun emplacement as well.
In now, his sleek black Mobcat chariot, which is what I wanted to talk about in the first place.
Yeah, when they show up, there's a whole, like, mob outside.
Mm-hmm.
He sees all the people from town, like, going to blow up whatever the fuck is there.
Yeah, he recognizes one of them right away, Gurney Caslow, a character who he doesn't like very much.
Yeah, and he's like, oh, I just know that, you know, fucking Jin and whatnot, the dude as well. Because it was Aunt Jin and
Umali Darm and Arvel Krind.
I don't know. It's a bunch of space names.
Yeah.
Eh. But he's like, yeah, I'm sure they're in that crowd too, and I've got to get up there and stop it because they don't know what they're about to do.
Yeah, so he's going to run in there and tell them the dark secret of Seti Ashgad.
Yeah, and he runs up and he's like, stop! Seti Ashgad has not your good choices in mind. Why, he is a selfish man that cares nothing for your plants. And they're like, shut up.
Yeah, a lot of them are just like, what? And he's like, hey, listen, here's the thing. He's not here to help you. He's here to sell the entire plant to Lorinar Corporation on the cheap, and you guys as well, because you're already here.
Yeah, he's like, you don't understand. He gives no fucks about anything that you want. He doesn't want to get you equipment. He doesn't want to try and get you new deals with the Republic. What he wants to do
is turn people into dinosaurs.
I don't want to cure cancer.
Anyway, yeah, he's a dick through and through.
And they're like, I don't believe you. You don't have any proof. And finally, for the love of God, two characters get to be together as Leia comes out of the emplacement and is like, it's true.
I have this holofax or fax sheet.
I've got this Carfax.
I've scrimshaw I printed out onto a whale face.
You printed Scrimshaw onto a whale face, you say?
That's how it works, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Okay, good. Moving right along, no further questions. But she comes out waving a big sheaf of paperwork. The best part of any given movie is when the hero emerges with a bunch of paperwork.
Yeah.
And she's like, all right, which one of you? This is one of my favorite parts in all this. She's like, it's true. When I was stuck in his building, I found a computer which had a whole bunch of printouts of, or a whole bunch of his plans and stuff on it, and I printed them all out. Now, which one of you is in Neep?
I am.
I'm not kidding. This is an actual line in the book that does not get explained.
Yeah.
Which one of you guys out there is a Neep?
I am a Neep.
Yeah, and then one guy, Buldrum Caslow, Gurney's well-meaning older brother, steps forward from the crowd and is like, indeed, madam, I am a Neep, as it says here on my Neep card.
I set up that computer system for Ashgad myself. Mm. I can tell this definitely comes from his computer.
It's not easy being a Neep.
Deep, leap, creep.
I don't even know what the fucking Neep is, but that's what. But Buldrum's one of them.
Apparently,
it's just Nerd Squad guy. Which
I guess
IT technician. It's
the one dude who can set up computers is a Neep.
Yeah, the only guy on this entire planet who can set up computers, and everyone calls him a Neep. That's reductive. He's a man, Leia. He has a name. It's Buldrum. You know what? Actually, that's stupid. Just call him Neep.
Yeah. So she's like, look at all of these papers I've got. Why, it says he's going to sell off the planet to Lorinar, and there's going to be essentially forced slavery, and he's going to take all of your shit.
Yeah, and she gives them the papers, and they're all just sort of yelling individual chunks of it. Like, oh, transfer of material, isn't that just a fancy term for theft?
Taxation, isn't that just a fancy term for theft? Hi, I'm the libertarian Star Wars guy.
They're going to sell the crystals at 67 fixed rate?
That's in this economy? I do love that there's one...
Yeah, McDonald's at home.
There's one guy there who's like, poppycock, Ashgad's amazing!
Yeah, and it's Gurney Caslow. He's the one loyalist to Ashgad in the entire building.
And does not care. He's like, fuck it, I don't care if I've seen all of these papers that show that Seti Ashgad is very definitely going to attempt to fuck us all over. I still believe in him.
Yeah. And then the mob turns on Gurney Caslow and sort of just holds him in place while he rants and raves about how he's on Gurney or Ashgad's side. And
I love
that Luke is still stupid here. I hope that's the thing you love.
Yes. I was about to say, I love that there's a conversation now where Luke and Leia are talking and they're like, oh, you know, they get the reunion with Legaeus, so Legaeus is super excited to see that Leia's all right.
Master Leia, I can't believe I get to see you again.
Oh, good.
This guy's gotten older every page of the book.
Yeah, he's got that super age disease.
Yeah.
He's just going down fast.
Yeah. When we first get the description of him, he's just described as like a vaguely elderly but friendly gentleman. And by the end of the book, he's just like,
I drank from the wrong grail.
Yeah. So they have the reunion, and that's nice. And then Leia's like, ooh, I don't know, can Ashgad get out of here? And he's like, oh, yeah, all he needs is to input some coordinates or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And Luke's response is, well, can he do that?
Does he have
the education?
Legaeus, tell me, is he as smart as his father, Seti Ashgad? And Leia has to be like, for Christ's sake, Luke, I figured it out in 18 chapters. What's wrong with you?
Yeah, Leia... Leia's like, of course he can input that. That's easy. He fucking designed the Z-95.
That's a crazy claim, by the way.
Yeah.
I thought this guy was like a political maneuvering type, and you're telling me now that he's the primary architect behind a specific space fighter?
Hey, they said he's the one who designed that entire ship that he's going to take off in.
The Reliant, yeah. It's amusing to me that she's like, yeah, he's a leading hyperspace engineer. In fact, he designed this non-hyperdrive capable starship. All right. Thanks, Leia.
And even with that, Luke's like, but how could he do that? The Z-95 has been on sale for more than 50 years. She's like, you dumb motherfucker.
I mean, to be fair, it's a weird, stupid mystery that someone accidentally made super smart vampire food. And then that vampire food kept a dude alive for 75 years for no good reason. So, I mean, it's a confusing conundrum. And when she's like, hey, there's a weird bug pyre that's part food and part evil Jedi monster.
And he's like, yeah, I know. I met him.
I met him. And she's like, yeah, but he's been keeping Ashgad alive this whole time. So that's the same Ashgad. And Luke's
that,
like...
That keeps the crowd astonished as well. They're like, what?
What? Wait, who's making superfood that keeps you super smart? Yes, he started as a simple acai berry.
But yeah, now that's the name of that little crab is Asim.
But now you wouldn't believe it. His omega-3 levels are off the charts. Fish oil runs through his veins.
So that is also the last straw for fucking what's his nuts?
Gurney Caslow.
Gurney,
who was hurt enough. He's like, wait, you're telling me that my hero is an 80 or is a 100-year-old man who's been kept alive by sucking on food bug jugs?
He's gonna sell us all to a corporation and enslave us? Well, how about fuck you? I've got grenades.
But the thing is, he's still on, even at this point. He is still 100% an Ashgad loyalist.
Yes.
He snags grenades from some random person in the crowd, and Luke's like, I wouldn't have thought that guy'd be so nimble.
Huh.
As he leaps to the fore and blows up the cannon emplacement.
Yeah.
Oh, he's immediately murdered.
Yeah, he gets shot, but they don't shoot the grenade, so they get to land inside of the emplacement and blow up.
Yeah.
But you'd think that Luke would have just been like, oh, let me just flick that away real quick with the Force.
And Force.
And no.
Sorry, there's going to be a little Force storm somewhere.
It's tiny. All I did was a little bit of it, but it's okay.
Sorry.
I've already established that I do not give a fuck, except in this one where he keeps talking about, because there is currently a Force storm.
Well, yeah,
because
Beldorion's on the move.
Yeah, so Beldorion is doing stuff, and he's like, ooh, that Beldorion, he doesn't even care if someone gets crippled by their own blacksmithing material. Like, my dude, we get it. You're very guilty about the fact that you caused someone to lose their legs or whatever.
You feel super bad. It makes perfect sense. I understand. But yeah, Gurney Caslow's last moment is throwing a belt of grenades at the local gun emplacement, and that's one gun emplacement down, which is really bad. So they're going to rig up a couple of the local crash ships around here as replacement cannons and point them skyward. Because it's vitally important that the Death Seed not get off planet.
Yeah. And you might be wondering, well, gosh, didn't Leia and Callista both go to the outpost?
Right, yeah.
Why has Luke and Callista not been reunited?
Because Callista's hiding in the bathroom.
Callista, we cut to in the gun emplacement just going like, oh, my God, don't tell him I'm here.
Mm-hmm. Straight up closing the shutters and peeking through them until the religious pamphlet guy leaves.
Like, just shoving their friend out there. Tell him I'm gone. I went somewhere else.
Yeah. I mean, she comes out when Luke leaves, but up until that point, she's just hiding in the gun emplacement like, I don't want to talk to Luke. I don't want to. And, like, there's a whole conversation that she has when she comes out with Leia where the two of them discuss what they're going to tell Luke later, what Leia will tell Luke later.
Yeah, because she even goes like, hey, are you going to tell Luke that you met me? And she's like, yeah, it's probably for the best that I do that.
I'm really bad at lying to Luke, so yeah. And Callista's like, are you sure? You don't have to tell him you met me.
But if you do, just let him know that we must go separate ways.
Yeah.
Well, I am on a path that he cannot follow.
Yeah, she basically says the most romantic thing she can think of, which is like, tell him I will love him for as long as my life is in this body, but that my love can have no part of him in my life. You're like,
tell him it was me and not him.
Tell him to keep chasing me, and then say, I meant just kidding, don't. But do, though.
So yeah, Callista stays inside the gun emplacement, and someone even goes up to her and is like, hey, isn't that Luke?
Mm-hmm.
She's like, yes.
Yes.
And?
Yes.
are you going to go say hi?
Nah, I'm good. No, I'm fine. I'm going to wait until he moves to the next house down and then read his funny pamphlet.
God damn it.
It's the saddest. It's a moment where you don't think about it while you're reading through, because she pops out after Luke kind of leaves on some other heroic quest, and she's like, okay, is he gone? But you have to think, when you're reading the entire huge confrontation with Gurney Caslow and all the big reveal and so on, is that Callista's right there hiding.
Yeah.
She's just hiding behind a bulkhead, peeking out a window, being like, oh, it's Luke. It's really important I not talk to him like an adult.
And also, like, she could have very easily just been blown up, given that the dude threw grenades in there.
Mm-hmm.
And she was just like, nah, I'd rather get blown up than talk to him.
Oh, I'd rather be blown up than call Luke for help.
Ugh.
So, yeah, they're going to try and get things together to save that gun emplacement. Meanwhile, back to Admiral Dalla.
Admiral Dalla is hanging out with these two droids. And she's like, hey, tell me everything that there is that's been going on.
Tell me all your thoughts on God.
Yeah, she wants to hear. Because
I'm on my way to meet her.
Yeah. God damn, I like that song. Now I want to listen to it. but yeah, she's like, hey, tell me everything that's been going on in this sector. And unfortunately, we don't actually get to hear 3PO describe his version of events for the past couple of days.
He's like, what we do get is 3PO describing how he's like, well, I make an approximation of what humans would do with their arms open and spread to say, this is all I've got.
This is all I know, man. With his weird little thing that connects his forearm to the inside of his upper arm.
Yep.
That little dingle he's got in there. But basically, he doesn't tell her the whole story because he's not supposed to reveal, like, Leia's involvement in
state secrets.
There's all kinds of state secrets he's privy to. But I would have loved to hear him just whine endlessly about, like, meeting Captain Zork.
Oh, my goodness. Well, to start with.
Yeah. Ooh, Captain Zorkstruck or whatever the fuck his name was.
And then we were kidnapped for the fourth time.
Yes. Had to go to Nim Drovis or something and watch these gross little fireplug monsters stuff cake in their face.
Ugh.
And then we met an 80-foot-tall flower man.
And then, in the fourth grade, I went to the movie theater, and I brought fake vomit with me.
It's a close approximation of the way humans vomit.
Yeah, we do not get that, but Dalla is buying none of this.
Yeah, she's like, okay, so your story is fucking stupid, and it's full of very specific holes that are shaped like state secrets from the rebellion. So I'm just going to plug R2 into the wall and read it, print out from him directly.
Yeah, I love that she's like, oh yeah, I was taught once how to like get information from a droid the easy way, and 3PO's like, oh, how nice for you.
Oh, that's wonderful. I wonder what that means. I certainly don't read anything into it. I mean, this whole chapter has him, like, when he's talking to her, she's like, well, please, do tell me more of your troubles. He's like, very well. Also, we were stuck in a plague plan. She's like, you are bad at reading when I'm saying something rhetorical, aren't you?
Yeah.
And he's like, yes. And then he files the whole conversation away in his rhetorical considerations folder.
Like, he's got an entire folder in his database for how to tell if someone's asking a rhetorical question.
Yeah. Rhetorical considerations, by the way, is one of those CDs you can buy from that push-button kiosk at a Target.
I thought you were going to say one of the CDs you can get from Starbucks, but okay.
Either way, that's pretty much the same thing. But, you know, you go to the Target, and there's that little wall of CDs, and you press, and it goes like, Celtic Memories.
Yeah.
Rhetorical Considerations. Big Band Jazz.
Planes of Memory.
Paducis Chorios.
Suckin' Cake.
Put this in your zwill hole.
So, yeah. And it says that she gets out a coax cable.
Mm-hmm. It specifically says coax.
Yeah. Good. Great. And connects that to R2 and finds out what is going on. But that's pretty much, we have to end there before she actually finds everything out. But just like plugs R2 into a terminal.
But weirdly, don't worry, because she literally comes back again in this chapter.
Oh, yeah. But first we have to quickly see Han dodging lasers from those needles.
Yeah, the CCIR droid fighters, the little needlers, are flying around shooting missiles at them and blowing up one of the larger of the patrol craft they brought with them.
Yeah, they are flying around and they're like, look, we can't actually blow these guys up because it's almost impossible. Like, they've been doing this for like an hour or something and he's managed to hit two.
Right.
So all they can do, though, is dodge. So, like, as long as we just, you know, fly in weird patterns and try and stay out of their, like, sights, we can survive longer than just trying to shoot them.
You'd think they'd try some space AOEs, you know, like drop some bombs out the back or something.
You'd think that they would do
something. It's all
lasers.
They just keep trying to shoot these things with lasers instead of kicking a bomb out the back door of the Falcon or or any other kind of AOE trick that you could pull off in a space fighter. Yeah.
Speaking of that, I got to go to the bathroom and kick a bomb out the back door, if you know what I mean.
Ah,
hey.
Delayed fuse.
Delayed blast fireball.
I'm just kidding. It starts stinking immediately.
So, yeah, it's them just dodging and lights are going off and their shields are failing. And
he's arguing with Lando. And Lando in this book is basically, in the very limited portrayals he gets at all, is described as like a wussy administrator.
Yeah, they not doing Lando any favors in this book.
No.
I mean, at least he gets lines, unlike Chewie.
I mean, to be fair, he's in his late 40s in this book and he doesn't need this shit. One of the thing is in the expanded universe, Lando is consistently just portrayed as doing Bespin again.
Yeah.
So every time we check in with Lando, it's usually like, oh, I'm running a big walking colony on a planet where it's too hot to be on the day side of the planet. So we have a giant walking, literally on a bunch of legs, mining colony that walks around the planet in circles.
Yeah. I mean, it's another one of those things where, like, if you saw an alien do one thing, that's all that alien species does.
Yeah, that's Lando.
We saw Lando do one thing, and that's all he's allowed to do.
Yeah, for his entire expanded universe life, he solves a couple of mysteries.
And rewrites a couple of histories.
Yeah, but mostly he just takes over weird mining installations.
Yeah, he's just like, look, what I do is I do mining installations, and I might pilot. That's about it.
Yeah. So in this case, he's just like, I don't want to stay here, Han. This is stupid.
Oh, and they picked up his Sullustan friend, right?
Did they? They pick up Nien Numb?
Yeah, it says they picked him up along the way.
Oh, okay. So they've got Nien Numb with them, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a rad dude.
Yeah, so that way he can be the co-pilot while Chewie runs around trying to stop the ship from exploding.
Which is what's happening, because every time the two of them are having this boring conversation, but then Chewie will just run by in the background.
Yeah, in the background, it's just, he runs past,
just arms billowed out behind him, just running all Naruto style.
I love that he has only ever been in the background of anything in this book, but at least in this scene, he's the only thing keeping this ship together while the two of them are having the dumbest argument.
This might be the best portrayal of Chewbacca we've seen, because with no spotlight on him, he can't do anything stupid or out of character, but he does do rad stuff. Like the part when he comes out of the pool in Palpatine's old apartment, and he's just covered in babies. just they're all dangling by his fur, and he's like,
what are you going to do?
This is normal. But Chewbacca's running around fixing shit on the ship while these little needle droids blow it up.
Yeah, and Han's manning one of the guns for some reason.
Yeah, they're holding out here as long as they can, because he's pretty sure something important's going to happen.
He's like, we got to hold out until the actual fleet gets here.
Mm-hmm.
Though I don't know why that's important,
yeah,
that they be here before the fleet if they're just going to get blown up anyway, but whatever.
Sure, whatever, Han. You do you, buddy.
Yeah, great.
Yep. Meanwhile,
Dala.
We go right back to Dala.
Dala has the information from R2, just, you know, got it right out of his little system, and she has nothing nice to say about anyone.
She basically turns into the Star Wars Yosemite Sam. They're both known for their flowing gouds of red hair and endless invective strings.
Yeah, she just hates everyone in this final bit of the chapter.
She finally does a dramatic reveal about who she is at this point, where she's like, I'm the president of the Incorporated Systems or something.
Yeah.
And her basic deal is, she was asked, after her failed attempt to take over the Jedi Temple on Yavin 4, she was asked by a bunch of disparate, abandoned Imperial groups who want to live peacefully outside the scope of the New Republic.
Well, yeah, because she hates the Republic, but she also hates what's left of the Empire, because it's all just bickering, sycophantic assholes, and she's like, nothing that I actually loved from the old Empire still remains.
Well, like, the only thing she ever really liked from the old Empire was Wilhuff Tarkin anyway.
Well, yeah, but in this one she's like, it was all about courage and honor, and we were out there being courageous and honorable when we blew up a planet with no weapons.
Yeah. She was always pretty brainwashed by the Imperial cause. So she's like, oh, festering blue blazes, smirking, smoldering blue particles, I'll punch him in the, oh, that rabbit. She gets really mad, mostly at, I mean,
Catellus.
She's mad at Catellus in particular, but she has some invective to sling at, like, Leia and the Republic in general, and
Q-Varks. a lot of this is her just being like, Uga, tell us that little piece of shit. He shouldn't even be where he is. He wasn't worth a goddamn. Why, if Wilhelm Tarkin was still alive, I'm like, yeah, I get it.
Blow him out a window or whatever. I didn't sure.
I'd give myself a promotion.
I get it. You were Tarkin's special project, and you never figured that shit out.
Ugh. The whole thing is her just being like, look, what we have is a bunch of dudes who are Empire people who wouldn't get along in the Republic, both mm-hmm. because they were ex-Empire, which means they're not going to look favorably upon us, and also because we just sort of don't like the Republic, but also we don't want to join any of this Empire warlord shit, so we're given the ability to go to Paducius Chorius.
Yeah, they bought an entire continent of Paducius Chorius.
Like, we got a southern continent somewhere, and they were like, great, here, you can just have that, settle it with your like thousands of people that you have apparently and it's fine.
Oh, and then also she was invited to be the head administrator of some sort of military squadron or something. It gets very light mention, but she's like, yeah, I'm just about peace now. Also, I was invited to be the temporary head of a military group.
But she's mostly just like, nah, man, all I want to do is just fucking retire with all of these people.
Yeah,
to
I've lost enough battles, I'm done.
Yeah, I just want to go to Paducius Chorios, hang out on a continent, and chill. Mm. And this motherfucker,
this dumb Gatellus motherfucker, is bringing all you idiots around here, which I specifically did not want.
Yeah, I'm not going to be able to get my planet because he's going to try and take this place over. And also, he's selling out the idea of the Empire to Lorinar. Fuck this guy.
Can I just also interject that one of the invective terms that she slings at him is of a particular bit of...
Yeah.
I don't know if you wanted to, because there's two words.
I mean, go for it.
There's two words in this set of chapters that I feel like are worthy of mention. One of them is beignets.
Yeah, she's talking about how, like, oh, like we would have wine and caffeine and beignets. And I'm like, okay.
Hang on.
You're not allowed to say coffee. You have to say caffeine because this is Star Wars.
Yeah, it's space. There's no coffee in space. There's wine in space, but no coffee. It's caffeine or calf or vine calf.
Well, yeah, but wine is like a type of drink rather than a specific thing.
Yeah, it's like a process. You can turn anything into wine. You can make tomatoes into wine.
It's like if they said they had some sort of ale, I'd be like, yeah, of course you do.
Yeah, yeah.
But
beignets?
But beignets? I'm sorry, what?
That's like a regional donut. That's such a very specific thing to call out.
Oh, yeah. It's not even like saying, oh, and they had like fritters. Because I go, okay, again, that's just something you do. Like, it's not very specific.
I mean, we've already established that there is a space New Orleans. It's it's the planet Chadra 4 where all the Chadra fans live. Remember we established?
Oh, yeah.
We go get up in the trees. Yeah, we're going to get up in the trees and eat the fruit till we get drunk from it.
Oh, yeah. Okay, oh, no, the big wave. I don't get who's going to get you.
It's just a bunch of little drunken bat people. So we've established that there is a space New Orleans, so that must be where the beignets are coming from.
Yeah. But I guess that would be amazing. I would love if the Chadra fan were like, oh, yeah, we're known for our fruit juice and beignets.
Also, no one can understand what we're talking about ever.
Not a goddamned word of it.
But the other thing that is a specific word that she calls Moff Gatellus, when she calls him a sycophantic, bootlicking, brainless catamite of a man, which I never thought I'd see the term catamite in Star Wars.
Now, this was a hole in my knowledge where I was like, I don't know what catamite is. I assumed that was a Star Wars thing.
Well, it's such an old-fashioned, creaky insult that it's not common parlance. It originally is derived from the Latin Ganymede, and it was used in Latin to describe a little boy that a 20-year-old like rich Roman dude would keep around for sex.
Yeah.
So it was basically like your little pederast kid, or you're the kid you keep around to rub your dick on. Over time, it started as a term of endearment.
Well, yeah, it's a term of endearment if it's like, oh, this is my young twink that I have.
Yeah, that's
what
started.
But then it was an insult if you were an older gentleman because they're like, dude, you shouldn't be doing this.
And in modern parlance, the term catamite, as it still survives, basically is like, haha, you're a bottom. It's like a joke. It's like, oh, you take it up the ass from other guys, ha ha ha, you know? So that's what the term means now.
Yeah, I didn't. It's basically just her going like, ah, what a big queer. And you're like, hey, come on now.
Yeah, it's such a weird thing to say. Like, it's so specific.
Yeah, well, that's been the thing I've noticed the most about Hambly is her weird need to put very specific terms in things.
Yeah, yeah. Like when she was she was the one that was a reference to an extremely old French author, yeah. Rabelaisian.
Yeah, I'm like, come on, you don't need to do this.
These are so weird and noticeable when you do them, and this one puts homophobia right there in the book, and I don't need that.
Yeah.
People are supposed to like Admiral Dayla. She's an interesting character. I mean, she's a bad guy, but she's an interesting one.
Yeah, I mean, you may not want to like her, but she's at least someone that you should be able to be like, oh, this is a villain that I can go, ooh, you're interesting and kind of cool.
I have a grudging respect for you, even though you slur people's sexual choices. But that was a very unusual word to see.
Yeah.
So I just thought I'd make mention of it because I got the Ghiblis immediately. I mean, I had to go like, wait a minute. I'm pretty sure that means that's like modern or ancient parlance for bottom as a derogatory statement.
Yeah.
So I had to go like Google it and look it up to be sure. But damn.
Yep.
There it was. Anyhow, that's what she's mad at those people.
Now, she reveals that she has basically an entire fleet of ex-Empire people and a whole bunch of ships. And she's like, well, fuck it. Let's go blow them up, too.
Yeah.
So it seems that now the fleet that Han managed to cobble together is going to get some backup from Dayla.
Yeah, I can't remember what happens with Dayla. I've read lots of stories with her in them. I always get her confused with Isani Sard, who's another major Imperial woman character. But I think that Galad Palaeon, her partner in crime for the Jedi Academy attacks, actually surrenders to the Alliance or to the Rebels and becomes part of their fleet. But she, I thought she died gloriously. So maybe this is where she goes.
I don't know. I mean, she was supposed to have died with Callista, is what they say. Like,
yeah,
she was supposed to go down on the same like Star Destroyer that Callista went down on, but neither of them died.
Yeah, the Nighthammer. They were supposed to both die on the Nighthammer. Callista infected the Nighthammer as a Force ghost.
Yeah,
it was part of the whole attack on it. But whatever. Anyway, those aren't books we're going to come to anytime soon. I just thought it's so weird to see her at all.
Yeah,
it's a especially late period edition
as this like last minute inclusion. Like, why?
I mean, on the one hand, it is nice that to see an author from the expanded universe allowing characters from other expanded universe novels to show up in the book, because a lot of these books had a problem with that, where the only characters that were ever mentioned outside of their own books were Jade and Thrawn.
Well, yeah, it was okay. Is one of these characters super popular? Okay, I'll put him in my book.
Yeah.
No? Well, then fuck it. They don't exist because I've got my own cool moth.
Yeah, but Hambly seems to have had a lot of names to drop because she mentions like Gantoris and Dorsk 81 and Admiral Dalla. She has a lot of important drops.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Speaking of important drops, I got to go to the bathroom.
You want to wrap this bad boy up or was that a joke?
It was a joke. It's all jokes. It's all jokes. Yeah.
You don't have to poop right now because, John, if you need to poop, then you should poop.
Oh, okay. I'll just poop right now.
Okay, please do. And please poop here in my bedroom. Oh, man. Never mind. I changed my mind. First of all, it's weird that you grabbed my box of Jenga tiles.
First of all.
Yeah, I don't understand. Were you going to wipe with them or poop on them?
Neither. I just needed reading material.
Oh, right. And my Jenga tiles do have words on them.
Yes, they are little dares on each one.
Yeah, I have a weird thing of Jenga tiles. All right. Well, anyway, John, was there more to this chapter? I think we're
no,
done,
that's,
right?
That where we end is Dalla basically saying that she's going to go send her fleet of ex-Empire to... I was about to say beat off Catellus, but let's not do that.
No, let's leave Catellus' sexual life out of the books entirely, can we?
Yeah,
a character we've never met.
Yeah, she was just like, you know, as much as I think Leia is a piece of shit and I would love to see her get hoisted by her own petard, I also very much hate Catellus and I'd rather he not take this zone so that we can actually... live somewhere.
Yeah. So that's the end of the chapters. Who knows what's going to happen in 21 and 22? Probably a bunch more characters show up.
I guess. I hope that in chapter 21, we get a big reveal of someone else here. And you're just like, great.
Hi, we're Cam and Teon Solusar. Hey, I'm Corrin Horn.
And we're here for one chapter. Okay, thanks.
This is wonderful. I'm so glad to meet you, Corrin Horn. I just found out I'm a Jedi. That's great.
That's so good. Mm-hmm. I'm glad.
You're the only actual Mary Sue in Star Wars. All right. So, John, I think we're just about done here. Why don't you tell them what they've won?
So if you like what we do here, you like the Star Wars and you need just a little bit more, just a little bit more to wet your whistle.
Just a hair. Just in case you wanted to wet your whistle with a hair.
Just in case you needed just a little wafer-thin hair to wet your whistle.
Yeah, you just put a little hair down your throat. Maybe it's an eyelash or something. You don't know, but it's driving you insane, and you can't get it out of there with your fingers. If you want that very weird, specific, horrible experience,
then you can go to patreon.com/systemmastery, support us at the $2 level, and you unlock all the bonus content for
in the world.
All of it. For anyone else's Patreon, too.
That's right. You unlock every single Patreon's bonus content. Now, we aren't responsible for what other Patreons actually do.
Now, we told them.
We told them.
That if someone is a $2 donor, that they should give them all of their bonus content.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if they don't comply with that, of course, you should email them and let them know.
Yeah, let them know specifically that System Mastery and Expounded Universe said that they have full access to anyone who gives us $2 has full access to their Patreons.
Yeah.
We said, and so...
I mean, we declared it.
It's been declared. It's the rules.
So let it be written. Mm-hmm. So let it be done.
Yeah.
So you get all of our bonus content for this show. Every week we go to Wikipedia. We find topics and subjects of interest in the Star Wars universe and bring them back and tell each other and you what we found.
Yeah.
The little nuggets in the Star Wars universe we have dug up.
We bring you fun nuggets. And if you want fun nuggets and hairs in your throat.
If you want fun nuggets, well, hold on. I got to go to the bathroom and drop some fun nuggets.
Oh, what is wrong with us? Anyway,
I don't know. Running bit is great.
It's about $4 a month.
Speaking of a running bit, I've got to go to the
bathroom. About $4 a month. You get 4 extra episodes of podcast a month. Plus, and honestly, at $2 pledge, you get 2 more than that as well.
Yeah, you get our System Mastery bonus content.
So you're getting like 6 more episodes a show, and that's a pretty good deal. So for $4 a month.
Yep.
So please, pledge. Join us. Help us out, because we want to keep growing the show.
Yeah.
I mean, our ultimate dream is eventually to be able to have a little space to do recordings here in the town.
Yeah, we want to be able to get to the point where we aren't just recording in Jeff's bedroom.
Yeah, and that's something that's going to be tough to do because we live in San Diego. The rent here sucks.
Yeah, everything sucks.
Yeah, so...
Except for the weather.
The weather's great.
And the people.
The people are very nice. The entertainment, awesome. The beaches, fantastic.
Oh, the food.
The food is actually very good if you like Mexican, and we do.
Yeah, but so, other than that...
It's awful.
What have the Romans done for us besides the streets, the aqueducts, healthcare...
So, yeah, just support our Patreon. It's at patreon.com/systemmastery. Thanks so much.
Yeah. So we are going to go find some stuff to look up in Wikipedia, but we will see you again in another week.
And until then, I've been Elan Sleaze-Boggiano.
And surprise, I'm Deathsticks.
That's a new one.